You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello.
Here we are today in the studio, beginning of Advent season, dealing once again with our theme of immigration and citizenship in Canada. I recently just returned from a business trip to Italy, and I was struck by the interest and, we'll say, concern relating to, in particular, people immigrating or attempting to immigrate in Italy. I was very struck when I was there by the similarity of the themes that occur between Italy and Canada in terms of people coming to various countries, young people leaving, and just how, perhaps as we say in French, plus que ça, plus que c'est la même chose. In other words, things change, but not really. It's like the never-ending story of immigration and citizenship. And in that context, it's interesting when we do a comparison between what is occurring in Italy and what's occurring today is how the political system and the legal system that underpins it has approached these issues from the very get-go. It's sometimes very easy for people, let's say, to criticize lawyers who are often involved in the front lines of dealing with issues like this, to say, well, it's only in their self-interest and there's always another excuse. But we all know that as any vibrant democracy and any system of thought requires more than whatever people just feel like saying off the top of their head. And it's, and so with that, we're going to I'm going to present to you today a few issues. One, I'm going to talk a little bit about some areas that may seem, we'll say, simplistic, but very often people see me on the street, they say, you know, we see these things in the news, but, you know, what does it really mean? How does it all fit into what's going on day-by-day situations and the legal system? And then we're going to, we're also going to look at some areas where we've seen some truly silly things. And we're going to address this perhaps with a bit of the theme of the voice of Catholic radio in Canada, which is what we are. And so I would like to also encourage you, because we try to make it an interactive program. I know there's many of you that may feel a bit hesitant to call or to participate. We don't cast judgments on what people think or don't think or whatever. The idea is to share information, because as you share information and you dialogue with other people, there are sometimes issues that come up that are very important, and you can at least learn to appreciate differences of opinion, even if we don't agree with another opinion. And the radio station call-in for English is area code 416, which is here in Toronto, 416-245-1534. I repeat, 416-245-1534. If for those of you who are listening feel a bit more comfortable asking a question in French or even in Italian, we can do that and address the reply in English for the benefit of all of our listeners. That being said, some of the things that have occurred most recently, which once again, we tend to live in a vacuum. We sort of think, well, whatever goes on, as I mentioned before, in Italy or elsewhere, it doesn't affect us upon us at all. We're in a nice little cocoon system in Canada. Who the heck ever wants to come to Canada? You know, it's always cold. The winter's arriving. And we always like to complain about or talk even about the weather. Someone made a comment when I was in Italy that the difference between an Italian and a Canadian is that Canadians always talk about the weather and Italians always talk about food. And it's probably true. It shows a difference in our our points of view and our culture. But one of the things that is happening on an international front, on a more serious note, is the whole question of refugees arriving from the United States. Once again, we seem to think, oh, it's the Americans that have that problem in the United States with President Trump's attempts to do certain things and the great struggles that we see going on in the United States between the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the President, all of whom are of the Republican Party, but none of whom seem to be able to come to decisions very easily. Maybe that's the beauty or the bane of the American political system. But one thing that has occurred is that President Trump had decided basically to end residency permits for many Haitians. Now, you might think, well, what's that got to do with anything here in Canada? Many of you in Montreal, of course, would know that there's a very, very large Haitian community in Montreal because most of the Haitians speak French as the first language. And as a result of the devastating earthquake that occurred in Haiti a few years ago in 2010, there was a great humanitarian relief effort, including the United States, which largely permitted a large number of people to come and get set up because the system in Haiti could no longer handle the humanitarian crisis that's there. One could say it was very similar to what we saw in the news, if we try to put it in perspective, well, what's happening in Syria, let's say, but not from a civil war, that's from a civil war perspective, but still the idea that there's this great humanitarian crisis and how are people going to react? And we know that Germany, for example, accepted 1 million people, and now Prime Minister Merkel is facing the political consequences of probably that very brave decision in that she has a reduced power base and a minority government in Germany. So you see all these hot-button issues, even though Spike Lee says do the right thing. A lot of times on a political level, you can't necessarily do the right thing all at the same time. And so we see now in the United States that a decision for the ending of these residency permits is going to have a very huge impact. You're going to see huge demonstrations, excuse me, in the United States, because as you can understand, many of these people from 2010 have sort of made the United States their home. They've been there for 6-7 years. The kids are going to school. They've learned English. If they're smart, they've kept their French, because we know here in Canada that the ability to be bilingual or trilingual leads to better integration into an economy and a better lifestyle for the person, and certainly more employment opportunities. So, but what we've seen since the Americans have clamped down, and because we have a large French-speaking base in our country, that since last February, we've seen almost 15,000 people crossing illegally into Canada from the United States, of which 13,000 of those cases are pending, and something like 90% of them are Haitians, who are, of course, stuck. And as you can appreciate, you can imagine, if you were a person in the United States, you would feel like almost like the rug has been pulled out from underneath you. You've been set up, you're working, your kids are going to school. The country where you come from, with the greatest of respect, which was already an extremely poor, if not one of the poorest countries in the world, you're just getting a decent life and education. And people are supposed to go back to that environment after being here in Canada for so long. It's not going to be an easy adjustment, and it can lead to a lot of problems. So this is something that, if you look in the news, you'll see that it will happen. And in Canada, it's a very real impact, because many of these people who are refugee claimants, of course, and not all of them, I must tell you, but let's say 80 to 90% of them don't have the economic means to be able to hire proper litigation immigration counsel to put forward their application as a refugee. And so this, in fact, is oftentimes financed through the legal aid system, which, by the way, you and I and all of us basically support through our tax system. It's getting to such a critical situation that there's not even enough lawyers, God forbid, who can help out. And not that there aren't enough lawyers, but you have to also understand that the legal aid work that is done in terms of payment to a lawyer is at a very, very low level. And to provide a quality service to someone is probably asking a fair bit too much. So many of these people doing this work, or even the immigration consultants who work in this field, are they have to have a certain passion and desire to assist these kinds of applicants. But the biggest problem right now is there's this whole bottleneck. For example, in Saint-Bernard-de-la-Colle in Quebec, which is a popular area, the government of Quebec, to its credit, has tried to set up stations to address the situation, but there's about only 30 legal aid lawyers working full-time on it, and it's just not enough. And of course, what happens is we get these huge backlogs of people, backlogs that Canada had largely eliminated through a number of measures. One is through the addition of many more immigration decision makers, and through a more controlled system of immigration with the United States, in particular, that wherever you arrived, that's where you had to process your refugee claim as a general principle. Obviously, many of these people who are coming in, and apparently the success rate so far is very, very low. And the Minister of Immigration, Ahmed Hussein, who's from here, from Toronto, and by the way, as a matter of fact, I understand that actually he, of course, he's a lawyer, but he's and a minister with the current government, but he's also, if I'm not mistaken, a Somali refugee as a young boy. And he has said that the fact that many successful Haitian claims, the rate is very, very low. It should serve as a cautionary tale for those coming into Canada. And it's interesting because what a lot of people don't realize, and once again, this is maybe the bias that we have towards newcomers, just as what we see perhaps in Italy with the large numbers of people arriving on the shores of Sicily who are not documented. There's a process and a system to go through, even though the percentages of people who are proper immigration refugees under the United Nations Convention of Refugees may only be 15 to 20% of the total applying. There's still a process and a procedure that has to be followed to bring justice to people. And so the Minister of Immigration said, Canada, coming to Canada, first of all, has to be done through regular channels. So there's a rule of law. Things are done in a proper way. Because too many times we can all be very critical, and we hear this all the time in our communities. Oh, there's these kind of people and they all get in, and there's those kind of people and they all get in, and I can't bring my brother from wherever he comes from. And secondly, the asylum system or the immigration refugee program is really only for people who are in genuine need of protection. Once again, genuine need of protection. We think about the Syrian families in terms of civil war. And as the Minister of Immigration said last week, it's not for everyone. So we should realize that a number of the people coming here, which are starting to overwhelm our system because of our American cousins to the U.S. who are adopting a much, much more stringent and some would say arbitrary approach to immigration, will have a big impact on us. Remember, please, that we are going to allow in the next 20 years, I have made this point and I'm not a propagandist, but the truth is that on a demographic level, Canada with its 36 million people, as it moves probably to a critical mass of 60 million people in the next 30 to 40 years, given the number of seniors like myself, I'm a senior now. I turned 65 this year, although I don't feel like it. The number of seniors and the demographic bulge that we have from the baby boomer generation requires that we have larger numbers of younger skilled persons to meet the demographic need. The average rate of births per woman in Canada is around 1.6, 1.7. The magic number in demographic circles is 2.2. So therefore, if you don't have 2.2, you don't replace yourselves. And Canada is in a trajectory moving upwards, and so it will need a lot more people. But Canada, as a country that favors a system of the rule of law, is going to choose who comes to Canada, giving balance and scope to the various immigration categories, including refugees, which, by the way, do not constitute more than perhaps at the most 15,000 to 20,000 number people a year. So if we're going to have 300,000 to 350,000 people a year coming, and these are people that we choose to come to Canada through our system for the reason that I described, then as you can see, in the next 20 years, this is not an issue that's going to go away. And to the credit of our governments, in plural, because some of you may think that, oh, Mr. Martinelli is always so critical of this party or that party. It has nothing to do with parties. It has to do with the rule of law and how we approach a problem. And in this respect, we have to give credit to all governments who have tried to address this issue in a way that is open, transparent, and accountable. That is also a great challenge, because many of us, and I'll pick on the Italian community since I'm Italian, will say, oh, well, you know, why can't we bring more Italians to Canada? I mean, Italians are wonderful people. Of course, I agree with that comment. But the point is, it has to be seen in the broader context that, as well as they are, that we try to be open, transparent, and accountable on a very wide basis, so that the people that Canada needs are allowed into this country, no matter where they come from. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and we'll be for 1 minute, and we'll come back, and I'm going to talk to you again about some of these little things that get announced and how they fit into the context of our legal system and what is going on today. We're back in the studio discussing immigration law and citizenship matters today. One of the changes that was announced on November 23rd related to what many of you might think is an innocuous announcement, the list of countries for which a medical examination is required for temporary residents. These would be people who are coming in as visitors. And this was a change that was made. And I bring it of interest because some of you might think, well, it's just an innocuous little comment, because once again, as I was saying with refugees, we tend to have generalized comments about things because we see one situation and we make it a generalization for everything that happens in Canada to all people. So we say we see people who maybe are using the healthcare system in Canada and they say, well, this is terrible. I mean, we all these people coming from inside the country, they use the healthcare system. And, you know, we have such a need and the government won't put certain drugs on the list that are covered for people who really are in genuine need. And that is an ongoing struggle. But we should realize that actually the system is not so open as people might think. People very often do require medical examinations coming into Canada so that they do not present a health hazard for all of us who live here. And this is something that's always in a state of flux. And the government recently just announced that for agriculture workers coming to Canada from certain designated countries will now have to have they reinforced that they're going to have a medical examination before coming in. And what was interesting, those four new countries where they were added were Fiji, Singapore, Timor, and Tunisia, of all places. Singapore really struck me as unusual. But there probably are good health-based reasons why there are particular issues in those countries for which the government really wants to make sure that Canadians are safe. And by contrast, there are countries now where the immigration medical examination is not required. And that now includes Argentina, Bahrain, Belize, Colombia, the French collectivity of Wallis and Futuna, Portugal, Seychelles, Suriname, and Venezuela. And the next revision is going to take place in late 2021, and then it will be updated every 3 years. So you see, it's not something that does happen every day, absent emergencies. So as I said, those countries where it's been added and those countries where it's a brand new requirement, there'll be changes that will be required if, for example, people are even coming to visit. The other thing that happens that people think about is they just think that, oh, it's just easy to waltz into Canada. And we repeat, as we've done perhaps ad nauseum for some of you, that in order to come to Canada now as a visitor, you have to come in, you have to apply for something called electronic travel authorization, unless you are a green card holder or a citizen of the United States. And that includes everybody, whether they come from South America, Europe, Asia. It doesn't make any difference. You have to do something. And even where you don't need a visa, you need an electronic travel authorization, without which you will not be able to get on the plane at the point of departure. And this is also a system that tracks people coming in and out of the country in an easy way, and also provides security that, that of course, we're all very concerned about, given some of the events that we see happening around the world today, in particular what occurred in Egypt this past 2 days, which, once again, people have to realize the Sufis, some of you may not know this, but the Sufis are a sect in the Muslim faith, a branch of Shia, who, in fact, are roundly discriminated against by the Sunni and Shia majorities in many countries. One has to be very clear on that. And they are considered more of a mystical religion, but they are really discriminated against. And we see in Egypt that their mosque was blown up and over perhaps 300 people were dead. And they're going to find out if it was the Islamic State or some other radical organization that wanted to get rid of them. And you should remember that many countries outside of Canada, we see these events and think about it. Egypt also has a very large Coptic Christian population. According to some, 10 to 15% of the population, maybe up to 20% of the population, may be Coptic Christians, who are also the object of great discrimination. It's something that, of course, if you listen to the Pope, he has his ear to the grindstone. And, of course, most recently in Burma with the Rohingyas, who are also a Muslim group who have been traditionally discriminated against in, once again, a Buddhist country. So you see, discrimination has no national boundaries. It seems like it's the human condition. We're all guilty of it. And perhaps the only thing we can do is try to question ourselves and think and reflect a little bit within ourselves about how we think about other people and how they're really like, as opposed to thinking that maybe we have more in common than what we don't have in common. But the electronic travel authorization is a requirement. Another comment that was issued this past week, which was amazingly interesting, because unfortunately I have at the present time two or three Italian clients, you could say. You say, my God, Italians are able to come to Canada. They are, with great difficulty, I should say, much to the chagrin of maybe many of my people in the community. But one of the aspects of the Italian immigration to Canada today for young people are people who are looking to, of course, improve the English language and perhaps even obtain certain educational skills that perhaps will lead them to be able to work and hopefully live in Canada legally. And so they come to Canada at great expense to themselves and their families to improve their English language skills and to go to school. Unfortunately, not all the educational programs are run by the universities and colleges or even the high schools here in Ontario. And so what occurs is that there are private colleges. And there's an assumption, because in many countries, private and public colleges are treated somewhat equally. There's an understanding. And right now I have three clients, believe it or not, from Italy, who are stuck in this great conundrum because they were in a legal program, got a student visa, and to perhaps get an additional college diploma or any, and of course to upgrade their English language skills, which I mentioned before is so critical in the ability to not only integrate yourself into Canadian society, but to have an economic option that is better for yourself and therefore for all of us. And what's happened is, what we've seen is that these private colleges in particular do not know or care to know that if their programs will or will not lead to post-graduation academic work visa. And this is very, very critical for people coming from many parts of the world. And so, believe it or not, there was actually the National Association of Career Colleges, which are a lot of them are private colleges, as I mentioned. They actually published, believe it or not, a couple days ago, the following comment. Dear student, in light of confusion that recently took place among students of private career colleges in Toronto, Career Colleges Ontario and the National Association of Career Colleges have requested that all private career colleges make sure all international students are clear about the following. Now, this is very important because there's a great deal of misinformation that unfortunately we're facing every day as lawyers for people who've spent a lot of money thinking that they can go to school and they're not getting any advice from the educational colleges and they just say it's not their job, which may be correct, but it just shows you how important it is to get the right kind of advice from people who know what they're talking about, that is immigration lawyers and hopefully immigration consultants, some of whom are very good, but unfortunately, in two of the three cases that I mentioned to you, were very wrong and gave the very wrong advice to the clients, which we're trying to clear up. But regulated career colleges cannot provide immigration advice or advice on student visas, work permits, and so on. The student must look for an immigration lawyer or consultant for such information. So I think this is the message is this, is that they really don't know what they're doing on this front, and you have to really get somebody who will really be able to help you. Because even on the internet, even on the government web pages, you can be very easily misled. So maybe spending a little bit of money, given the lifetime decisions that young people are making or students are making in this regard, is very important. And international students attending regulated career colleges are not eligible for the postgraduate work permit program. So they come out and said very clearly what the situation is. But they've said that, you know, that sometimes it's a lead-in to an officially recognized institution. But they have to really make it clear that they don't want to mislead people anymore. And so what they're saying is they feel it's their responsibility to ensure that college students receive as clear information as possible. They should always talk to an immigration lawyer or immigration consultant before applying for a postgraduate work permit. And they are, and that these career colleges are not an institution whose diploma is recognized as valid for career education. And so the current legislation does not make the diploma from these career colleges eligible for the postgraduate career program. This is very important for people to know, because these programs tend to be a lot more expensive, less expensive than applying to community colleges and so on. So that is another little announcement that will have a big impact. We can see the presence of course, many students, given our demographic need that I talked about, and people who are looking to see if Canada is a good place to live, notwithstanding the bad weather that we have. Since we're all Canadian, we all like to talk about the weather. And maybe Nick will convince Radio Myria that I should have a program in English on food and cooking. And I'm sure that'll probably be more popular than this program, because everybody likes to talk about food, especially Italians. Just as a little aside. But anyway, so now another one of these little innocuous announcements, and I want to draw it out because it's really important for people who are listening to understand, again, that the immigration program is a program that is under our federal constitution, a matter of federal and provincial law. And the provinces are becoming much more active in deciding who they want to come live in their province, and which Quebec, by the way, to their credit, has done for many, many years. And in that context, I want to point out that Ontario is becoming much more active in doing so. There is actually something, and I'm with Nick, I think what we're going to do is we're actually probably going to broadcast on a tape basis going forward a segment on the Ontario Immigration Act of 2015. You're going to all say to me, what is this guy Joe Martinello talking about? The Ontario Immigration Act, who ever heard it? Well, you heard it first here on Radio Maria. We've been talking about it for a long time, that there's federal and provincial jurisdiction. And there is something called the Ontario Immigration Act from 2015, and it's actually going to go into effect on January the 1st, 2018, which is why I said maybe we'll tape a special program for one of the days so that we can talk a little bit about it. We have just been re-released, and we're reading the regulations, but we're going to do something about it because it underlines again that especially those of you who are maybe here in Ontario or want to come to Ontario, that it's important. The other big announcement, for which we're also going to have to do another program, probably on a tape version, because these topics tend to be so huge, and it's good to get, once again, the knowledge base underneath them before getting comments from people, is the European Union and the Canada Free Trade Agreement is going into effect. And we finally, in the last couple of weeks, got the first draft of the free trade agreement between the European Union and Canada. And let me tell you, this is going to be big news, not small news. It's going to be very big news because it's going to institute a system where there's a greater mobility of labor between the European Union and Canada, notwithstanding what's happening in England with Brexit. And we can expect that once the British and the European Union get their agreement, their difficult agreement and their divorce agreement, as we call it, in place, that we can expect that there will be some also similar type agreement between Canada and England, with whom we have such a long-standing relationship. And so that is another announcement that it's going to be of great importance. And Ontario, one of the things that Ontario is going to do, and this also was recently announced a week ago, is that they're going to do something called the in-demand skills stream. So they always use these acronyms, and they're always changing, and you know, your head spins when you hear about them. But what it is that if people are already working here in these kinds of positions and the employer meets the prevailing wage and so on, you're going to be able to get a job offer from an employer that meets certain criteria. And the questions that are going to be asked, and it cannot be seasonal work. I want to make this very clear. But it's going to be for permanent and indeterminate full-time job offers in ineligible occupations in the agricultural or construction sectors. Now, this is very important because, as we all know, a lot of local youth here cannot meet the demand in the areas of agricultural and construction sectors. We rely more and more on people from outside of Canada who would like to come to Canada, who have these skill sets to come here and work, much like what happened in the 1950s and the 60s. So, as I said at the beginning of the program, plus que change, plus que c'est la même chose. But so the government of Ontario is saying, now, wait a minute, let's look at this. We have an economy in Ontario where there's a very low unemployment rate. There's still a lot of business activity. Things seem to be working quite well. We have lower numbers of people on unemployment insurance and welfare. And we've got the demand for these people. We've got to somehow try to use the immigration system to make these people stay here and so that they can be part of our local economy. So this in-demand skills stream program is going to be for people what we call in the national occupational classification of C level, C or D. This would be considered not really skilled or maybe semi-skilled. And I'm going to give you the ones that were mentioned, because if there are people or you have friends who are in the construction sector in these areas, they have a special opportunity right now in Ontario to perhaps regularize their status, both in terms of work, but more importantly, to get their landed immigrant visas under the Ontario Immigrant Nominee Program. So kudos to Ontario for taking the steps. And I'm going to mention very briefly the people who are in this skill level: residential and commercial installers and servicers, heavy equipment operators, except for crane operators, general farm workers, nursery and greenhouse workers, harvesting laborers, construction trade helpers and laborers, industrial butchers, meat cutters, poultry preparers, and related workers. And you have to note again that seasonal work is not eligible. There are a number of other requirements in turning, including having worked one of the previous 3 years here in Ontario on a full-time basis, that they have a high school diploma, that if certificates or license are required, that they have it, and they have to have an English or language French level skill, what they call benchmark 4, which is not a very high level, but it has to be a decent working level. So this is very unusual because most other immigrants coming to Canada have to have 6 and 7, and very often as a high level skill, which means they have to speak English or French pretty well. Not only speak, read, write, and so on an overall basis. So this level is not high, but it's not, someone who doesn't speak the language. And of course, you have to have enough money to be able to live here for 6 months for you and your family. The employer, of course, is not everybody and his brother can say, oh, I'm just going to bring my brother from, I'll say, Italy to come over. You have to have been in an active business for 3 years. You have to have business premises in Ontario. You have to be in compliance with all provincial laws. And if you're inside the GTA, you have to have $1 million in gross revenue, 5 permanent employees. If you're outside the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, you have to have $500,000 in annual revenue and at least 3 full-time people, and it has to be a permanent full-time job offer. Now, all of this, you would say, wow, this is perhaps good news because there's all kinds of employers that may have the need and they may be able to hire people. Yes, but it's got to be done right. And like all these bureaucratic measures, they really do require the assistance of a person like an immigration lawyer or immigration consultant who is licensed, because doing it for you by yourself, there's nothing in life you can't do by yourself, but you probably won't be able to do it very well and very efficiently. And it can have a huge impact. It's not a question of what it'll cost. It's an investment, of whether it's from an employer or from an employee. Thank you, Nick. We're back in the studio again talking about immigration law and policy. And not today, but we also talk about citizenship law and immigration. And immigration. There's no such category as citizenship immigration. It's immigration and citizenship. I mentioned before the break that we were going to talk a little bit about Manila, because Manila is a source of a large number of people coming to Canada. Once again, people have generalizations. We see many people in the Filipino community, of course, who came here, especially in the caregiving program, and having established themselves well in Canada with landed immigrant status, are bringing now their spouses and their children. And in fact, they represent one of the top three groups every year coming. And so this past week, we also had a publication, we'll call it, because as lawyers, we received this information that there was a 23% increase in permanent residence applications in 2016 from the previous year. The majority of the applicants were citizens from the Philippines. And generally speaking, the rates are high because the Filipinos, to their credit, have an educational system in English. And so many of them are very well adapted to integrated to living here in Canada and able to get jobs very, very quickly and very readily. And they, unfortunately, given the economic situation in the Philippines, sometimes they feel they can do things themselves very well, and they tend not to have sufficient supporting documentation, which results in processing delays. And once again, with the electronic travel authorization requirements, we saw that many people who were Japanese and Korean nationals, permanent residence holders, would enter from the Philippines. That's now been eliminated. But we've also seen, interestingly, because we always think that people who come to Canada stay forever, there's actually now, with the introduction of electronic travel authorization, there's actually been a number of what we call permanent residence renunciations. These are people who may have landed immigrant status legally, but they decide that they're not going to keep it. And those numbers doubled in 2016 with the introduction of electronic travel authorization that I mentioned earlier in the program. And we say you have seen a lot of people from Korea and Japan who no longer wish to be Canadian permanent residents and renounce their status before traveling to Canada. And the reason for that is, of course, people from those countries can very easily actually get visitor visas, and they don't want to basically maintain landed immigrant status when they no longer have a need for it, although they may still have a strong connection in Canada. For example, 60% of Koreans who leave Canada for different reasons actually have family in Canada. And so they renounce their permanent residence, status in order to be able to facilitate their travel to Canada in the future through the electronic travel authorization. Imagine that, 60% of Koreans who leave have families in Canada. It's not just us Italians. And then the last thing on the Philippines, which is actually quite an interesting issue, is that in 2018, and the reason I mention this is because we talked a little bit about the educational system. We think that everywhere in the world, the educational system is like in Canada, which is not the case. For example, in countries like India and Sri Lanka, which are many of which are English-speaking institutions, their high school, or what we call their secondary school system, is not a 12 or 13-year system. It may only be a 10 or 11-year system, and this creates enormous difficulties in the later on for people who are looking to come to Canada under various programs, because Canada, as part of its due diligence, not just in the health sector, but also in the educational criteria, does an equivalency with their, or they force the applicants to provide an equivalency of their educational criteria. And this equivalency very often does not meet our Canadian standards. So the good news for those of us who, you know and have Filipino friends and clients is that in 2018, there will be grade 12 graduates from the Philippine public school system. Now, this is very important because they will now be able to enroll directly in universities abroad. And as I said, most of them who in the Philippines go to school, even though Tagalog is now a national language, most of them go to school in English. And therefore, we can expect that there will be a number of qualified Filipino clients who have the financial wherewithal to be able to come to school in Canada, because there is a huge community and a huge support network for Filipino nationals, who traditionally, by the way, have also gone to the United States. So with what's happening in the United States, where they're certainly not going to feel as welcome, Canada is going to be the huge beneficiary, as the New York Times reported, that maybe we should make America great is going to make Canada great. And maybe all of us Canadians should thank President Trump for creating such a negative image in the United States that a lot of people who are perhaps the best and brightest of these people looking to leave their country of origin, that they will think that Canada is a much more welcoming place to come and maybe work and go to school and live, notwithstanding our bad weather, of course. And they will do that. So the Filipinos will now be able to enroll directly in Canada, and they may want to take advantage of this milestone. And also educational institutions in Canada, because they many of the schools have a target in post-secondary institutions to having 10 to 20% of the student population be fully paying non-residents. And of course, many of these people are very highly academic. I must tell you, they're very qualified, hardworking people. And these Canadian post-secondary institutions in the long term will unexpectedly improve the quality of Filipino applicants in the skilled worker and professional economic stream. And we have to also realize that there are large numbers of skilled Filipinos who have returned from the Middle East, which is proving unstable. And those people, of course, having already lived outside the Philippines, may look through a third country, so therefore we'll say Canada as a potential source and desire, and Canada will look to them. The Philippines' unemployment rate, by the way, though, has improved to only 5.4% in July 2016, down from 6.5%. So the economic situation in the Philippines is changing radically, and it may be the lure of overseas employment seems to be fading as more and more workers are seeing jobs in their own country. So this is, unfortunately, maybe for us in Canada, a common pattern that we saw with many, many immigrants from Italy who, especially after the Red Brigade issue passed in the 70s and the 80s and 90s, we saw a marked decline of people coming from Italy because the economic conditions had improved so radically for a period of time. So we are seeing, therefore, in the Philippines, although there's still the numbers are huge, we might, in fact, not see the great numbers that we've seen in the past. And of course, the other thing that has occurred is the number of caregiver applications. We all know that there's been large numbers of Filipinos who have been very, very helpful in coming to work here in Canada and helping certainly a lot of us in the Italian community who have parents and grandparents who are needing services. And these people, especially from the Philippines, have been very, very helpful. A, because one must say it directly, a lot of them are Roman Catholic like ourselves. They share certain religious values, and they've been very, very helpful in keeping many of our parents and grandparents, who, of course, really do speak English, most of them, and if not, a lot of the Filipinos that I've had the pleasure of dealing with seem to pick up Spanish and Italian with a great facility. And they've been very helpful in helping all of us continue to work and make money and help maybe assist financially also with our parents' or grandparents' caregiving requirements in their homes in particular, and have also helped them to come because a lot of them not only educated in English, but they even had backgrounds like in nursing, and they've been very, very helpful in helping us through this change of life situations. So that's unfortunately all the hot time we have today for our English language broadcast segment. We will see if we can maybe tape some more sessions, because the kickback from our comments from that we have from our people in the studios is that they would like to have us on air more often than not. But unfortunately, a lot of these programs require a lot of work and effort, and we rely on volunteers to bring forward a varied programming to all of you who are listening to Radio Maria, or Radio Maria. I'm sorry, I always do it with the Italian accent. It's Radio Maria, and like to listen to us, and we're all trying to provide a wider educational format to all of you within our Catholic Voice throughout Canada. And we wish you all a great weekend as we move towards the Advent and Christmas season. God bless.
You have been listening to Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.